Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
From WBEZ Chicago, I'm Greta Johnson, and this is the Nerdette Book Club. It's just like a normal book club, except sometimes the author shows up too. So with Nerdette Book Club, you know, we pick a book a month and we talk about it with a rotating panel. Our April book is Alexis Coe's You Never Forget Your First, and you can hear the panel discussion next Friday. But today's guest is Alexis herself. She's a historian. She was a researcher at the New York Public Library, and she worked with Doris Kearns Goodwin on a new History Channel series all about George Washington. And she is also the author of this new biography of George Washington, which is why we are talking to her today. Alexis, hey.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We are so excited to have you. So I want to start with just the title of this book because I think it is hilarious and amazing. Why did you decide to name a biography of our first president, You Never Forget Your First?
You know, I didn't really make the decision. I just made one of many bad jokes that stuck. Yeah, I have a tough agent, which is a good thing. It saves me from my bad ideas. And He's you know, you have to really sell him on something. And I knew when I proposed a new George Washington biography that would join a pretty crowded shelf, I had to sell him from the very beginning. And so You Never Forget Your First was the subject of my first email to him about it. he's been my agent for a while. He was my agent on my first book, Alice and Frida Forever, Murder in Memphis. And then, you know, the body of the email said, I'm talking about George Washington. I'm not pivoting to memoirs or personal essays. And then we took it out as the working title, very, you know, in bold working title on the actual proposal, because I just couldn't find any, you know, I couldn't really think of anything. And I thought, okay, well, that gets people's attention. Why not? It shows them this is definitely a different George Washington biography. And then it just kept, I do a lot of, you know, speaking events and I'm on panels and it just kept getting tons of laughs. You know, they would say, You Never Forget Your First, dramatic pause, a biography of George Washington, and everyone would erupt in laughter. And at some point I wrote to the publisher and I said, you know, I think this actually conveys what I'm trying to do in book form, you know, in a sentence. And she said, oh yeah, no, this has been the official title for some time. Welcome to the club. So careful when you make bad jokes. I do it a lot.
I love that. You called it a crowded shelf. Like there are many hundreds of biographies that have already been written about George Washington. Why does the world need another one?
So I, as you said, you know, I'm a historian and I'm a political historian, which means that I dip into the presidency quite a lot. I don't believe in this theory of great man history that one man dictates everything. But I do think you can't deny that a president or at least his administration is incredibly influential in America. And so I like to read a few presidential biographies at once. This is something I learned in grad school. If you want to become a quick expert, you read, you know, 2 to 3, maybe 4 books, and they're in conversation with each other. The authors usually disagree. They have a strong opinion. That's a winning plan for most subjects and most people. But when I got to the end of George Washington biographies, I almost felt farther away from him. And I felt like, are these men in cahoots? And they were always men. They were always white men from usually Virginia or the East Coast. I'm from California. I'm a woman. It just seemed like everyone took an oath. Like, okay, we're going to start out. We're going to declare him too marble to be real. And then we're going to end up by saying, you know, he did this great thing. He emancipated his slaves. Let's just fast forward through all those details.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't get it. I didn't think it was true. And then I started just checking things like, how could they all be so consistent? Like, why do we need any of them to have written these books in the last like 100 years? They're just going to parody each other. And Story did not check out in the archives with a lot of people, particularly when it came to women or people of color.
Yeah, a lot of what you talk about, especially early on in the book, is about George's mother and like the litany of just like loaded terms that former male biographers have used to describe Washington's mom.
Yeah.
And it's like shrewish. I mean, it's just all the worst words.
Shrewish, you know, crusty. This, and again, this is not memoir. We're professionals here. We're trained historians. So it seemed hinky to me. And it also seemed weird because there are presidents who their stories are very much based out of this hard scrabble upbringing and life that begins in deprivation, whether it's like Carter on his, you know, on his parents' farm with his mother inviting hobos to stay because it's the Great Depression, or Barack Obama with his, you know, his parents' divorce and his mother's remarriage. And it didn't to me that we talk about Washington as being raised by a single mother who worked really hard in early America to protect her children, and that she raised incredibly successful children, not only her son who, you know, did some things, we still know him. Like, it's a great American story, far more than someone who was like destined to the presidency or, you know, was so mm-hmm. masculine. Like, he overcame, you know, at times he couldn't afford to feed his horse, Washington, right. And his mother, he's two generations away from an indentured servant. Like, that is the story I want to hear. That's far more interesting. But people really, you know, they want to protect this story of a man who's trying to escape a woman. And this is almost always true. It's not just with mothers in history. It's with wives. It's, if there's a woman, let's automatically think she's a shrew. And if we can't find evidence to support that, let's lean on others who have made these declarations.
That's fine. Yeah.
That works.
Yeah. I think we can just assume that most women are terrible anyway. It makes sense, right?
Yeah. And I think that's the problem that you're getting at, which is that when history is written by one people in this, you know, one group of people, in this instance, white men, you don't get they're only interested in like military history and masculinity and greatness, and they don't see things. And as Annette Gordon Reed famously taught us in Jefferson Studies, we don't always know what we think we know, and we need diversity of opinions and new eyes and new experiences, and for God's sake, some women and people of color.
Yeah. So one thing you've talked about in other interviews that I think is really interesting, and I had never really thought about in this context, but it's essentially what we've been talking about, except you call it the male gaze, mm-hmm. which I had only ever really thought of the male gaze in the context of like men looking at and appraising women.
Yeah, like ogling. Yeah.
Right. And like assigning a value on a woman based on how attractive she is, because that's the only point of a woman. But I think the idea of the male gaze when it comes to sort of like valuating other powerful men is really interesting. And I think it ties into a term you use in the introduction, which is called the thigh men of dad history. Tell me about the thigh men.
The thigh men are actually historians. They are Washington's past biographers. And it's just the shorthand I created that ended up sticking.
This is not like an official club or something. Not yet, anyway.
I guess it is now. They're well known for their membership, at least at this point. So I think that would be really sweet if they all got together.
That would make me very happy.
You know, there is something about Washington that seems to inspire a lot of physical admiration, like as if you're watching a sports game. And it's not that his body isn't, like, to quote John Mayer, a wonderland. It's amazing. But it's not, like, not because of what it looks like. To be honest, if you look at portraits of him, I don't, you know, like us all, as we age, things,
yeah,
gravity, you know. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. But they are, like, so into his body for the sake of it being a body. Whereas, like, you think, let me check the cover. Is this a romance novel? And I list them all, but go after Turnell the most because, like, he's the most famous. He can take it. I'm not hurting him the same way criticizing George Washington or, like, looking at his relationship with slavery is fine. He can take it. And it's just honest, and that's fine. We should not apologize for sticking to the facts. But the Thymen, what was weird is they always started or ended or focused, like, they were always centered by his thighs. They love them. And they would comment on, you know, how he gripped a horse and how they love. But the weird thing is like, they didn't stop there. And then they would say things like Turnell would say, you know, and his jaw was so strong, muscles going in. He would work his way down his body. And it was like, man, like, inappropriate. And we would say this, as you mentioned, if someone said this about a woman, like, if they talked about, I don't know, Martha's heaving bosom, I would mm-hmm. talk about it. And I also think that, by the way, Turnell spends a lot of time talking about Martha's looks, and he spends like pages, and at the end he says, but you know, she was considered a beauty at her time. Okay, so why do we need your opinion, man? Like, yeah. This doesn't help us out. But so I started to call them the Thigh Men as like a general comment on these men who are so interested in masculinity and they just miss everything else. You know, they only see the forest for the trees kind of thing. I needed some like term like great man history or like the male gaze or something like that to as like a placeholder. And so I put Thigh Men in brackets. And all my second readers kept taking them out of brackets and capitalizing thigh and men. And then I thought, like, oh, God, this is – did I, like, inadvertently create a term? And I was a little bit nervous, but I thought I do really want – I'm introducing big concepts, right? I'm going over the historiography. I'm really making this, like, both an academic and a popular book. And so mm-hmm. I have to make it really approachable. So you know what? I'm just going to do it. I'm going to, you know, own Thigh Men. And to my great relief, not only did people love it and it did disarm people, but like Washington's Presidential Library and my fellow scholars, they use it regularly as a term and now. And it's been pretty fun to see. Honestly, it's been pretty great.
So I wonder what has reaction from the Thigh Men community been like?
Well, so Mount Vernon, which is Washington's historic home and pretty conservative, mm-hmm. they asked for an early copy and I thought they are Thigh Men Central. this is certainly damage control or they're going to like preempt me and come out with some sort of attack. No. And then they invited me to spend the night and give a big lecture in one of their fancy Ford series lectures. And it ended up being great. I haven't heard a peep from the Thigh Men. I did write to Turnell because it just so happened that around the time that I made the New York Times bestseller list, they published an excerpt and they just happened, of course, to pick the four of pages that focus on Turnell. And so many of the reviews and the media coverage had all sort of honed in on this. And I really, it was almost reading like that defined the book rather than sort of like, mm-hmm. you know, I wanted everyone to join me as an expert. And the way to do that is to tell them everything.
Right. Well, and it's more that I think that you're setting the tone of it. It's not like I'm going to dedicate the next 200 pages to taking down Ron Chernow.
No.
You know?
And I even say I actually really like his writing. He's good. He's just, you know, he doesn't, I disagree with him. And I'm sure, you know, I know from reading his work, he disagrees with people too. This is the way it works in history. Mm-hmm. Like you have to say why you're doing what you're doing. Otherwise, if you love everyone who's come before you, why are you contributing? Right. And so I did write to him and I just said, look, I'm not goading you. Like, I'm not baiting you. I'm sorry. And I do appreciate, of course, as we all do, Hamilton. You know, I sort of wrote a very basic letter. And I did not hear back, but I heard from insiders that he received it and it was appreciated. And I think that's fair. And we'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Yeah, that is fair.
The criticism has been minimal and generally from offensive people who I wouldn't trust on any subject.
One thing I did see that I thought was interesting was that some people have accused you of being too irreverent in this book.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that term specifically? Because I think it's a really interesting one.
Well, it's funny because I think that they actually mean irreverent as a compliment. you know, it's constantly in reviews. It's like this irreverent, like breezy biography.
Yeah, it's like fun and snappy. And
yeah, I wanted it to be something that both satisfies my peers and also attracts people who feel alienated by the genre. Because it, let's face it, presidential biographies are considered dad history. You get them for your dad. They're on sale on Father's Day. They all come out around the same time. And that's just, that's not true. I think I think it's rude, but I think it's actually insulting to women and other people who do like history and are very interested in the presidency. But the funny thing about irreverent, even as a compliment, is it's pointing out that it's notable, right? And it's notable because it's rare. And I don't understand why we accept history that is reverent, because that's fan fiction. That's hagiography. That's not what we need to teach us. We need someone to responsibly present all different sides, the good and the bad, right? Not demonize someone, not also like laud them, but to give us like a well-rounded person or at least presentation, then let us decide for ourselves. You know, reverence is not something that we should accept in our history. That's sort of like this idea of American exceptionalism, and that's never been good for us. It's never been good for any country. It usually leads to their downfall.
More with Alexis Coe in just a minute.
Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
I forget what exact moment it was. It was kind of early on still in his origin story. But I was like, oh, this dude is super bootstrappy.
Yeah. He's like any president. He's ambitious. We say he worked really hard. We have to remember that he felt entitled and denied because his father died when he was young, and he was the eldest child from the second marriage, meaning that his half-brothers had been sent to fancy schools in London, and you know, their father had paid for their military service. You know, you paid to get in so that they would get good positions. That was the way to get ahead in life. And so he was pretty demanding as a young man. He wanted to be at the center of his country's story, but it didn't really matter to him which country that was. So we shouldn't like, I think it's a good thing to imagine someone like Washington and the other founding fathers, many of whom were rich and owned plantations either through inheritance or through hard work or whatever. Mm-hmm. Washington was sort of a combination. He always benefited from people dying in terms of wealth. But, you know, they were reluctant revolutionaries. They weren't like Che Guevara's, you know. They were more like, they were like, liberals who gave inspiring speeches and then got to office and kind of had to follow the rules.
I love that. That seems like a good way of putting it. So obviously, like, you knew a fair amount about George Washington before you started researching for this book. Mm-hmm. But I wonder, like, is there anything along your You Never Forget Your First journey that was particularly like surprising or exciting to come across?
Oh, yes, totally. I mean, I knew a lot about the presidency as an office. I wouldn't say that I knew a ton about Washington because he's considered pretty vanilla. And now I blame his biographers. But I wondered why so many biographers mischaracterized his relationship with his mother. They made her seem so awful without sort of criticizing him. And when the truth was that like many of us, he could be a decent son on many days. And on other days, he could be a negligent one. He could put his own career and his own adult life first. And could also get really annoyed with her. And I think we're all guilty of that pretty much all the time. Certainly, I'm maybe projecting, but it from anecdotal experience, I can say that this is true for me and everyone I know. And it's so funny that a lot of his contradictions still exist today, almost like we should look at them carefully and understand them in order to understand our world.
It's almost as if. Yeah, yeah.
Just you know, almost. Just wondering out loud here.
Alexis Koh, author of You Never Forget Your First, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
So, are you already reading You Never Forget Your First? Don't forget, we want to hear from you, like right now. Send us a voicemail with your thoughts. Just record yourself on your phone and email that file to nerdatpodcast@gmail.com. And hey, if you want to get a head start on our May book, it is N.K. Jemisin's sci-fi novel, The City We Became. The show is produced by me, along with Justin Bull. Our executive producer is Brendan Banaszak. Dissent is patriotic, y'all. That's all I'm saying. Eh?
Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.